the governor and attorney general suing over Biden's vaccine policy, winding down the public health emergency, plus Curtis Hill's political future, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending November 5th, 2021.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Attorney General Todd Rokita is suing the federal government to halt President Biden's workplace COVID-19 vaccination requirements. The Republican AG, in cooperation with Governor Eric Holcomb, is filing three lawsuits targeting policies for federal contractors, healthcare workers, and a broad rule for any company with at least 100 employees. Rokita calls the president's COVID-19 vaccination policies an egregious, insidious overreach of federal workplace safety authority.
This is not a workplace issue. It's been with us. It's been with us at our homes. It's been with us on our sports teams. It's been with us in our kids' schools. It's been with us everywhere.
The Occupational Safety and Health Administration's rule for employers with at least 100 workers gives them a choice. Employees get vaccinated or get regularly tested and mask up. Rokita Chief of Staff Lori Torres says that's not a reasonable choice.
I don't know how many of you have waited 5 days to get a test, get someplace to get a test. There are millions of Americans that, if they choose not to get vaccinated, will have to get tested. So a weekly test times the millions who may not get vaccinated, we're not even sure whether that's feasible.
Rokita will work with other states on some of the lawsuits. Will Biden's rules survive legal scrutiny? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, Lori Torres made what I thought was the most interesting point at that press conference yesterday. Is it a reasonable choice to ask workers to get vaccinated or tested on their own dime?
Oh, absolutely. And I frankly think if they get sick when they don't get vaccinated, it ought to be on their own dime as well. I am tired of this nonsense where people think that they have a constitutional right to infect the rest of us. They don't, okay? Vaccines have been required in this country since, well, way before I was a kid. In fact, George Washington made the Constitutional Army get smallpox vaccinations without a CDC or testing. This is ridiculous. Rokita, as usual, is wrong both legally and morally. He has no standing to bring this lawsuit. The issue of whether or not this is an overreach, and I don't believe it is. I think we settled this question when we went to 55-mile-an-hour speed limits based on highway funding. The federal government's money is involved, or if the occupational health and safety laws are involved, they have the authority. And he does not, by the way, have standing to bring this suit. He is not either an employer or someone working in a Medicare or Medicaid facility, et cetera. It's going to be thrown out on its ear. It's going to be litigated by an employer who has to comply with this. And he's wrong on moral grounds. He ought to be interested in protecting the safety. We are fifth. There are only five states worse than Indiana in terms of the vaccination rate. Five states worse. And the states, by the way, he's joining with in bringing this are Mississippi and Louisiana. So the idea that he's trying to make us into the Mississippi of the North is pretty valid. So the whole thing's going to be thrown out. It's just an appeal to the angry right wing of his party. And he wants that group to get him the nomination for governor. And that's what this is all about at taxpayer expense.
Mike O'Brien, you're not a lawyer, nor am I. I won't ask you to give me legal analysis here, but kind of to Ann's point there for a second, does it really matter for Todd Rokita, politically speaking, whether he wins or loses?
No. The governor directed this. This isn't Todd Rokita on some personal crusade. It happens to align with what would otherwise be a personal crusade, but him and 23 other GOP attorneys general wrote a letter to the Biden administration in September. So this isn't Indiana, like, out on a limb. It's half the country. It's half the states in the country. They're ultimately
the only one
probably going to be in this lawsuit. I think you have to split the question on the legal side. You're right, I'm not a lawyer, but I think from a policy standpoint, you can split the argument a little bit. The federal government, I think, does have the right for federal contractors, people that are entering into contracts and paying, to live by certain criteria. Facilities that receive Medicare and Medicaid federal dollars, they can muscle into doing certain things, including having their staff vaccinated. The 100 or more employees creates a lot of problems. One, there's already confusion. I mean, what we saw in Texas a few weeks ago when this was first suggested, and Governor Abbott at the time said, absolutely not. You've got these companies that are kind of in a lurch. The other problem you've got with the 100 or more, one, OSHA is there to exercise this authority for the emergency temporary standards, which is the authority that they're basing this on. That's for like work-related hazards. They're not telling me how to climb a ladder at my house. They're telling me how my employer has to create a safe working environment. So it is a stretch to think that it's not a work-related hazard, but I can get it anywhere in the world. And Todd Rokita is right about that. When he said this thing is with us everywhere we go, and the federal government can't follow us around and make sure that we're safe from it.
In your workplace,
to this, and the federal government is just trying to expand its authority as much as it can in a time when we're seeing everything drop. I'm with Ann. I'm frustrated with the unvaccinated, but this is a pretty dubious way to go.
John,
you can't in your workplace. Just one second on that, Tom, Brandon. In your workplace, you can't tell your employer you're not going to stand within 6 feet of another employee. That's the problem. Depending on how you're working, and it's interesting that a lot of the large employers, like Tyson, for example, that had the problem early, is requiring everybody to get a vaccine.
Well, they're in food manufacturing. I think it's this is going to be different. This is going to be different for a lot of people. I think the job market is so robust right now that. One, I don't think it's going to be a problem for people that really don't want to be unvaccinated. They're just going to go work somewhere else.
Let them.
John Schwanis, I want to ask you.
But they're unvaccinated. It doesn't solve the problem.
John Schwanis, I want to ask you. I started by asking, will Biden's rules survive legal scrutiny? Sort of to Mike's point there, does it depend a little on which rule exactly I'm asking about?
Well, probably to a certain extent. You gave the non-lawyer disclaimer earlier, and I'll offer my non-lawyer disclaimer as well. I won't pretend to assume what a judge at the circuit court level or appellate court level or even the Supreme Court might surmise. But I think the notion that the federal government, that somehow because the 100 employee threshold, that represents an unprecedented, what was the word that Rokita used?
Insidious
overreach or intrusion by the federal government. If you look at federal laws that applies to the workplace, that's not a very, that's not, you know, as low as it goes, you might say. You have federal law that in certain types of areas apply to 15 or more employees in terms of, say, certain types of applicant screening and hiring. You have COBRA, extension of COBRA benefits, and Family Medical Leave Act that's at, I think, 50 employees and up. So 100 is really, that it could go a lot lower in the scheme of things. And the federal government regulates all sorts of workplace safety rules. So there's nothing new necessarily about that. COVID makes it new, but these issues of federal involvement in the workplace in terms of worker safety and in terms of enforcing federal laws related to discrimination and the extension of benefits is not new. The final point I would make is the notion that this is just Todd Rokita doing the bidding of his governor and his role as attorney general seems a little odd because he's not agreed with Eric Holcomb on most of anything else and has gone his own direction. Yeah. So I think I can dismiss that argument out of hand.
Yeah, I think Todd Rokita would have filed these lawsuits whether
anyway,
or not Eric Holcomb had asked him to
right, it was just the suggestion that it was merely the governor's doing the governor's bidding.
I want to ask about Governor Holcomb standing up and saying, you know, I want to work with the attorney general to try and stop this rule. Does it surprise you at least a little bit? I mean, nobody has been more pro-vaccination, certainly as a Republican, than Eric Holcomb. He obviously never wanted to do a mandate, but doesn't this sort of accomplish what he wants accomplished without him having to be unpopular and do it himself?
Well, I mean, I mean, he came out and said his position. So if it's unpopular, it's unpopular. I wasn't surprised by it at all. While he has been very pro-vaccination this entire time, he has always, always, always stressed that it should be your choice. And I do think you can be pro-vaccination and not believe in mandates. And I do think it's a fair case to see. I mean, I don't know for sure, but has OSHA ever mandated any other vaccine for the workplace? And I obviously think that the healthcare worker lawsuit, that one will probably be a little of the all of them that I think that one might survive challenge, just because there's such a direct nexus between the people you're caring for, yeah, and the sort of underlying conditions they have and the position that they're in. They'd have to be cared for. They can't make a choice to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
The difference between whether or not his ability, whether or not the president's ability to do this survives is one question. Whether or not Todd Rokita can challenge it is something completely different. It's like him saying, Nikki, I think you were unfairly treated at work, so I'm going to file a lawsuit on your behalf. You cannot do that. You have to be directly affected. If they were really concerned.
Well,
if they were really
to be fair, the state. To be fair, the state would be in charge of actually enforcing the law. So
right.
I would think that would give them some sort
of
standing.
The state of Indiana, is very lax in its enforcement of OSHA. And if that's what they wanted to do,
we should have been putting billions of dollars in that OSHA for the last decade on the expectation that maybe they'd have to go and enforce a vaccine mandate. Is that what you're suggesting?
If you were interested in making certain it wasn't mandated, what you would say is whatever the federal government does, we are not going to enforce that on employers that are over 100 and be a defendant in a lawsuit by the federal government instead of grasping as what they're doing at standing to be the plaintiff. He's much more interested in the political part of this than he is the legal part of that. And that is
obvious.
True.
All right.
We have other things I want to
hold out for intervention by Todd Rokita on her behalf.
Yeah,
I think that
seems unlikely.
I wouldn't hold out on that.
All right. Well, moving on. Governor Eric Holcomb says Indiana is at a point where he thankfully can contemplate ending the public health emergency around the COVID-19 pandemic. Still, Holcomb isn't ruling out another extension of that executive action after November.
Declaring a public health emergency ensures Hoosiers are eligible for federal aid, and it triggers the governor's ability to issue a broad range of executive orders. In his latest renewal, Holcomb said he's asked his administration to explore ways to end the executive action. But he acknowledges that doing so won't mean the pandemic is over.
We need to make sure we're not overlooking anything and to ask the cabinet really think about what tools do we need to continue to manage our way out of this.
And Holcomb says no decision has been made.
I didn't give the cabinet my answer. I asked them to bring me data and information.
Holcomb again urged Hoosiers to get vaccinated as the best way to address the pandemic.
Mike O'Brien, is it too soon to think about this?
No, we have large vaccination rates. We have plummeting cases, and largely, I struggle to even just think about when it ends, how anyone's life is going to change. What's largely left in this emergency order is how other parts of government deal with themselves, how the federal government coordinates benefits with state governments, how state does it with locals. The day-to-day stuff, you're still running into a store and seeing people wearing a mask, and that's fine. I mean, a lot of this is coming down to the individual, and it's hard to conceive of a time when you would end it, and this is not ever going to end, right? Like, COVID is never going to end. We will have vaccinated people who have breakthrough cases. We will have people with booster shots who have breakthrough cases. This will be a disease we deal with till the end of time. And at some point, you've got to lift the government's this emergency order in place and get back to normal.
Yeah, to that point, there's not a lot of executive orders that Governor Holcomb has left regarding COVID-19. We saw a bunch of them, in fact, go away when he renewed the large declaration at the start of this month. So will ending the public health declaration or emergency declaration really make much of a difference, Ann Delaney?
I'm not sure it'll make an awful lot of difference. I think the most encouraging thing is that we can now get all children as young as 5 vaccinated. That's going to make a big difference. I know there are a lot of parents that have been anxious to have their children vaccinated, and that's good. I don't know what, I mean, cases are down. That's all good. The problem is it's not going away as long as large segments of the population are refusing to get vaccinated. Mike's wrong about that. We could eliminate that. We eliminated polio, okay, because everybody got vaccinated. Here, you've got this as a political issue on the Republican right wing, and the results of that are it continues. And, you know, okay, the cases are down. That's wonderful, and I hope it continues. What happens if there's another variant? And it comes back again because these people refuse to do the responsible and altruistic thing of getting themselves vaccinated to protect the entire community. That's why it's still here. But I don't think his
that's Democrats' argument to keep the government involved at every level of this. Well, what about the next thing we don't know about? What we can't
take
the federal government out of this.
Nikki
Kelly, this thing we don't even know yet.
Nikki Kelly,
let me ask you this. If the governor ends up ending the emergency declaration and at some point things really do get worse, not one of these smaller surges we've seen, but like really bad where he would have to direct hospitals to do certain things, what we've seen out of him in the course of 2021, is there really any chance he reimposes the public health emergency declaration?
I mean, to be honest, there's nothing in there right now that's doing anything to prevent the virus spread or deaths. We are down to basically financial reasons to have that order in place. So, I do think that if we had some sort of massive surge, he would put stuff in place again, especially stuff on like hospitals and things like that to make sure capacity is up there. But I doubt we're ever going to hit the peak we already hit last year.
All right, let's move on. Former Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill says he's open to running for political office again. WFIU's Brock Turner reports Hill has been meeting with constituents since he lost re-election last year.
Indiana's embattled former Attorney General Curtis Hill says he's considering a run for future political office. But speaking at an event in Noblesville about race, education, and COVID restrictions, Hill declined to specify a particular race he is eyeing.
I've been firmly implanted in the concept of public service since I was a prosecuting attorney from years before. So I anticipate continuing that process.
Hill's term ended last year when he was defeated in the Republican primary by current AG Todd Rokita. Hill's law license was temporarily revoked after the Indiana Supreme Court found he groped four women at a party in March 2018.
John Schwannis, will voters allow Curtis Hill to make a political comeback?
Well, I think the voting public here in Indiana and elsewhere in the country generally is forgiving. They like to see comeback kids, to borrow Bill Clinton's phrase. But in this case, you just have, as far as I know, denial still on the part of the former attorney general. There's no suggestion on his part that maybe he has learned, even if he didn't intend the his actions were misjudged. He certainly has learned from it and move on, but I haven't seen any of that. So it's hard to say, give forgiveness as an electorate when you don't have anybody showing remorse. The other thing I guess I would say is it depends on the ability of his potential opponents to bring up this issue. If he's running against somebody who makes, you know, is airing lots of spots, doing direct mail, really being public with, do you want somebody who's doing this and have sort of the shadowy figures of what he was accused of doing on the screen? That's problematic. If you have a candidate who either isn't inclined to bring that up or isn't well-funded enough to make the message out, well, then it's sort of the tree falling in the forest. Who hears it?
Nikki Kelly, I want to get back to John's first point there in a second. But Nikki, I want to first ask you, if Curtis Hill tries to make a comeback, is there an office in your mind that makes the most sense for that for him?
Well, I mean, obviously he's a lawyer, so a county prosecutor position, but he's kind of been there, done that. And obviously he lost the bid for the attorney general the second time around. So, I mean, I guess he could get into the legislative side, but I'm not sure if he would really be into that. And frankly, I don't know, things have changed so much in the last decade. I don't even think we have people serving and running for office with major issues hanging over them, and people don't seem to care anymore. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if he made a comeback.
And Delaney, John mentioned the idea that, you know, he hasn't seen anything from Curtis Hill sort of acknowledging wrongdoing and apologizing for that wrongdoing. And I agree, I haven't seen anything publicly like that from him either. Is something like that, if he wants to make any sort of comeback in politics, is something like that even necessary? Or to Nikki's point, does it not matter anymore?
First of all, Curtis Hill was defeated in a convention, not in a primary.
Yes, that's
okay,
true.
So it was Republican insiders who voted Curtis Hill out. In terms of
after several ballots,
admitting, what?
Several ballots.
But I understand, but it's not a primary. It's not a mass voting effort. And it seems to me he's the perfect kind of Republican candidate. Seriously. I mean, he's appealing to the cultural issues here, the nonsense about race being taught in schools and the nonsense about wearing masks, all of the cultural issues that Republicans use to stir up anger, he is appealing to. And in terms of remorse, did we hear any remorse out of Donald Trump before he was elected president for groping any number of women and saying the kinds of things that he said about women? No, we didn't. And did they elect him anyway as a Republican standard bearer? They certainly did. He lost the general vote, but he still was president of the United States. So I don't think the remorse is necessary anymore. And frankly, the way he goes about it, he'll say that he was a victim of you know, the establishment's attack and all of this nonsense. And he'll be a perfect nominee for a Republican. Maybe he'll run for attorney general again. Maybe he'll run for governor, which would be a smarter move on his part because he doesn't have to face a convention.
Mike O'Brien, there is going to be no shortage of Republican candidates in Indiana who want to run for any office that Curtis Hill might want to run for. So to that end, is it less likely he makes a political comeback if only because there will be quote-unquote safer candidates out there?
No. I think it depends on what he runs for and where it is and how high profile it is. He would have been reelected attorney general if he would have survived the convention fight. Because people stop caring about those offices once it comes to the general election in a presidential year with governor on the ballot, you know, the U.S. Senate, you know, 24, you'll have the U.S. Senate seat on the ballot. So I think people stop caring. I think misogyny is still bipartisan in America, but I don't think Donald Trump didn't, you know, to Tan's point, I mean, Andrew Cuomo didn't do anything Donald Trump didn't do. Andrew Cuomo's got to step down and Donald Trump becomes president of the United States. Yeah. So it's not that people don't care, it's they may not trust it or they may not prioritize it.
All right. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will former Attorney General Curtis Hill get elected to public office in Indiana within the next decade? A yes or B no. Last week's question was, should Indiana landlords be required to take emergency rental assistance funds before they can evict someone? 75% of you say yes, just 25% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, voters in northern Indiana approved only one of the state's two school funding referendums that were up for consideration this fall. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay reports the two school corporations with referendums on the ballot were hopeful this year's election would look similar to 2014 when both won voter approval for their tax proposals.
MSD of Boone Township was successful once again this year. Its referendum saw a little more than 66% of voters saying yes this week. Meanwhile, Concord Community School's latest tax measure failed. The superintendent said last week referendum funding has been a key tool for the district to offset financial losses caused by the state's property tax caps. The corporation asked voters to renew a tax rate lower than the one approved in 2014, but just over 51% of Concord's voters said no, rejecting this year's proposal.
Nikki Kelly, usually lower turnout elections, and certainly that would have been this, have been more favorable for referenda. So how much, though, can we really read into these results?
Oh, I don't think a lot of this stuff is very local. And to be fair, the one that failed was initially put in 2014. Since then, state lawmakers have pumped in billions of dollars to increase education funding. So, you know, maybe locals are just like, okay, fine, the state finally ponied up. Maybe we don't have to do sort of the extra now. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see that a lot more.
Yeah, John Schwanis, to that point, somewhat quickly here, especially with schools, school systems that have already put referenda on the ballot and are trying to sort of re-up those. Does this sort of make them think twice about whether or not that's going to be possible?
Maybe, especially those that aren't in a particularly bad financial predicament. And one would assume with all the funds that are coming in, as Nikki mentions, there won't be many of those that fall into that category. So it might be wise to wait a cycle or two if possible.
All right. Well, we'll certainly see a lot more possibilities for that when there are broader elections on the ballot next year. But that is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy. Please get vaccinated if you can. And join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.